Hello, I'm Lee, Lifestyle Manager at Beacon Centre. This week's edition of the Black Country Talking News is for Wednesday, the 7th of October 2020.
Welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightless Charity, Beacon Centre. I'm Simon. We are pleased to inform you that our Talking News service is now once again available in CD format. And to those who have received their CD in the post, you'll notice they're in paper envelopes, not the usual plastic wallets, so there's no need to send anything back. Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Online, by visiting Beacon's website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/on-air/podcasts. On Spotify and Apple Podcasts, simply search Beacon Black Country Talking News and hit the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading this week, we have Angela, Ian, Christine, Mina, Steve, Helen, Flashback Roger, Pete, and of course me, Simon. Included this week is a roundup of local news, our weekly quiz, we look at this week in history with our flashback section. In Sightless News, we look at World Sight Day. There's news from the Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, Black Country history with a look at Black Country canals, the weather for the weekend and next week, an update from Beacon, plus a music quiz to end. Now, we set you a little music quiz at the end of last week's edition, so it's over to you, Pete.
And let me give you the answers. So what we asked you to do is find the missing word. I gave you a song title and you had to guess the missing word. So the first one was from 1961. It was Floyd Kramer on the, and the answer was Rebound. Come on, who knew that? Most of you, I'm sure. All right, no one did. But okay, don't worry about it. Let's move on. 1962, Susan Morn and Bobby's Girl. That was 1962, Susan Morn and Bobby's Girl. Some of you might have known that one. This one might have thrown you. 1963, The Springfields and Islands of Dreams was the answer there. So The Springfields, Island of Dreams from 1963. And we threw in a fourth one last week. So from 1964, it was The Zombies and She's Not There. So The Zombies, She's Not There from 1964. Stand by for another music quiz coming up at the end.
And thank you to Andy Coulson for sending in the questions. We have our flashback quiz too a little bit later on, so don't forget that. But now, let's start off with some Black Country news with Angela and Ian. But first up, it's Christine.
Wolverhampton Council has announced the cancellation of its autumn and winter outdoor events programme, including Christmas light switch-on events, due to coronavirus restrictions. The council usually organises several large public outdoor events between October and December, including LGBT and Pride, Diwali, Bonfire Night and Christmas light switch-ons. But with the city's high COVID-19 infection rate and subject to local coronavirus restrictions, the authority has announced the events will no longer take place. Where possible, the council will be working with partners to organise safe alternative ways to celebrate the occasions online and via social media, with details in due course. Councillor Steve Evans, Cabinet Member for City Environment, said, "I don't think this decision will come as a great shock to anyone. The pandemic means that large public events are not an option this year. There's no way you can make events like these, which bring thousands of people together in close proximity to each other, be both safe and commercially viable. So we've had to take the difficult decision to cancel them in their normal format." He added, "However, we still want to mark them and are looking at creative ways to do just that, which will have an online focus." We have thousands of people who follow the council on social media and a website that gets a huge number of hits, so we need to utilise these channels to ensure we can still come together virtually. I know people will miss these fantastic family events, but they will also understand the need to be responsible and put public safety first at this time. Let us hope that 2021 will be different and we can once again deliver a brilliant programme of events for our city.
More than £250,000 of COVID-19 support grants may have been claimed fraudulently by businesses throughout the region, it has emerged. Both Wolverhampton and Sandwell councils have reported cases of fraud during lockdown, while Dudley, Walsall and Stafford have not uncovered any in their boroughs. Bosses said they have zero tolerance for fraud and will act swiftly if any cases are found. In the worst hit area, Wolverhampton council officers are investigating 19 cases, totalling just over £200,000, where grants were handed out after the coronavirus lockdown was introduced in March. Authority fraud officers said some beneficiaries are suspected of either claiming to operate from empty properties or had given addresses where they previously traded from. A report to the council's audit committee this week said more than 4,000 grant applications were processed and £47 million worth paid out to help companies through the coronavirus crisis. It also said 180 applications were rejected for reasons including ineligibility, failure to submit appropriate evidence and duplication. As well as the 19 being investigated, a further 10 payments are currently being withheld as officers await further information from the claimants. Audit bosses said they were confident of recovering money that should not have been paid out. Con men in Sandwell tried to swindle £265,000 destined for businesses struggling with a lockdown. The majority of cases saw the money stopped before it was paid out, but in two incidents, £35,000 was paid out to fraudsters. A report to the council showed that up to last month, Sandwell has prevented 22 fraudulent claims for grants between £10,000 and £25,000 each. Dudley Council has supported nearly 5,000 businesses during the pandemic, and bosses said they have a zero-tolerance policy towards fraud.
Cinema chain Cineworld is set to close all of its UK sites in the coming weeks. The closure of its 128 sites across the country, including in Wolverhampton and Birmingham, will put up to 5,500 jobs at risk. The closures will come as a release of the latest James Bond film was further delayed from November to spring 2021, it is understood. As first reported in the Sunday Times, bosses will write to Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Culture Secretary Oliver Dowden to tell them that the cinema has become unviable, as studios keep putting back blockbuster releases. Cineworld had reopened many cinemas in July when the lockdown measures had eased across the country. The chain has a 14-screen cinema at Bentley Bridge Retail Park in Wensfield, as well as branches in Broad Street in Birmingham, Southwater Square in Telford and Touchwood Shopping Centre in Solihull.
Artist impressions have been released showing how two Black Country leisure centres will look under plans for refurbishments. Improvements have been earmarked for Hales Owen Leisure Centre and Crystal Leisure Centre in Stourbridge. The Hales Owen site in Poole Road is in line for a revamp to its front entrance alongside improvements to its gym and new children's play area. One drawing shows the building featuring a new pink and white exterior. A planning application has been submitted ahead of the proposals. Crystal Leisure Centre is in line for improvements to its changing rooms, with a drawing showing a gleaming new facility featuring white and purple decor. Both leisure centres will have significant repairs carried out as part of the proposals from Dudley Council.
More than 1,600 pupils have been sent home to self-isolate on the back of 22 positive COVID-19 cases at schools in Wolverhampton. It can today be revealed. The figure has prompted concerns among MPs and health officials in Wolverhampton who say official guidance to send entire protective bubbles home when a case is identified was disrupting the lives of thousands of children and parents who do not have the virus. Wolverhampton Council officials say that since the start of last month, 22 positive coronavirus cases have been identified in 19 schools in the city. A total of 1,663 pupils have been sent home to self-isolate for 14 days, meaning 75 pupils are forced to isolate for every positive case identified. Advice from Public Health England says that when a COVID-19 case is identified, the whole bubble, a group of students who complete all lessons and breaks together, has to be sent home. Across the country, attendance figures have plummeted, with around 900 schools sending people home in the first 2 weeks of term due to COVID-19 infections.
Three more local news bulletins coming up shortly, but now a weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre with another roundup of what's been going on. It certainly seems to be getting a little colder at the moment, and it's definitely harder to get out and about in this weather. I hope your talking news is keeping you company at home, but as ever, if you need support, please call 01902 880 111 and we may be able to help. Now, have you realised it's more than 6 months since lockdown first began? Life for many of us now seems almost unrecognisable. I mean, who'd have thought we'd all know what Zoom was at the start of a year, but we know that for older people it's been particularly tough. Not being able to see loved ones and losing independence to get out and about really does take its toll. But given it's just recently been the International Day of Older Persons, we wanted to share with you just one of the ways we've been supporting people over the past 6 months. Since March, our team has made more than 8,000 welfare calls, checking in to see how our members are. We've been able to help them with all sorts of issues, including getting them access to food banks and even mental health support. But most of all, we've been there to listen when people just wanted someone to talk to. If you benefit from our befriending service, get in touch. You can ring us on 01902 880 111. Now, as you know, we've been slowly reopening our amazing retail stores in recent months, and we'd like to say a very special thank you to each and every one of you who's donated clothing or other household items to Beacon in recent times. Due to your support, we've now got an incredible 8,000 bags of items to sell on to help us help those living with sight loss when they need us the most. It does mean, though, that we're incredibly tight on space due to us having to quarantine all items before we sell them as part of our COVID-19 secure measures. So if you'd like to make a donation to one of our shops, please ring in advance to see if we've got space. You can ring us on 01902 880 111, press option 2, and we'll be able to let you know if we can take them. That's not the only exciting shop news we've got this week. From October onwards, we're so pleased to tell you that our Fab Clearance Centre in Lower Walsall Street, Wolverhampton, will be open 7 days a week. That's right, you'll be able to pick up a Beacon bargain any day of the week between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. As with all our stores, we've got plenty of measures in place to ensure we're COVID-19 secure. The shop only opened in February, so you may not have had a chance to pop down pre-coronavirus, but if you're able to get out, we can't wait to welcome you. Now, we thought we'd finish up this week with one of the easiest ways you can support Beacon. It's by signing up to Beacon's Golden Gates Superdraw. It costs just £1 a week, and you can sign up online and pay monthly. It's that simple. You could be in line for a big cash prize if your numbers are picked. Three Beacon players won £1,500 over summer. It's a great way of supporting Beacon. 45% of each weekly subscription will be deemed as a donation to the charity. Here's a link to sign up. www.beaconvision.org/support-us/goal-GOALDEN-gates-draw. So that's www.beaconvision.org/support-us/golden-gates-draw. And don't forget, Golden is spelled G-O-A-L-D-E-N. That's it for this week. Stay safe, stay warm, and hopefully I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Helen. More local news now with Ian and Christine, but first up, it's Angela.
Wolverhampton Council has secured nearly £200,000 in grant funding to boost its work in tackling rough sleeping. The government's Next Step Accommodation Programme award is to be used in the 2020-2021 financial year. The £198,000 for Wolverhampton Council will provide short-term accommodation to 22 people who are either rough sleeping in the city or risk of rough sleeping. The authority will work with partners to provide accommodation and support across the city over the winter period, and will also work with clients to help them find more permanent and settled accommodation. During the coronavirus crisis, the city's homeless operation group has helped more than 60 people in long-term safe, suitable and sustainable accommodation, while a further 100 have been supported to return to previous accommodation, find their own accommodation and or engage with support.
City of Wolverhampton Council should consider leaving its city centre headquarters because large parts of it are currently empty, opposition leaders have said. Conservative councillors in Wolverhampton say a conversation needs to be had about the future of the civic centre. With many of the council's 2,000 staff currently working from home due to the coronavirus pandemic, large parts of the building are currently unused. The Tories say the move towards home working will only increase in the future and that now may be the opportunity to begin exploring the possibility of renting out parts of the Civic for office space or other uses, or even leaving the building completely for a smaller base. But City Council leader Ian Brookfield said it was not something that was being considered. Councillor Wendy Thompson, the city's opposition leader, said the city centre economy is going through a difficult time and there is a huge building right in the centre almost totally empty. In the short term, use the building, get people into it, get it rented out, whatever. In the long term, a big organisation always has to be looking at its assets. They should be considering the long-term usage for this building, looking forward 5 or 10 years to what sort of organisation we should have. We have seen councils like Shropshire leaving very large buildings. We're not saying Wolverhampton should take this path, but let's have a discussion about it. She added, can we really afford to have such a large building sitting there empty? But Councillor Brookfield dismissed the idea, saying, there is a specific reason we haven't got 2,000 people working there. This is not a plan for the future, it is a product of the current circumstances. If we move, where are we going to put 2,000 people? We fully intend, as the circumstances and law allows, to get people back to work. There will be some people for whom it is beneficial to continue from home, but not the large part. It will benefit city centre shops desperately crying out for more footfall.
The Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, RWT, is officially smoke-free for staff, patients and visitors. The Trust, which runs New Cross and Cannock Chase hospitals, made the decision to go smoke-free in line with the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. It was recommended that all hospital sites should be 100% smoke-free, helping to create a culture where smoking is no longer considered the norm, protecting local communities from preventable illness. Smoking remains the largest preventable cause of death in Wolverhampton and is responsible for more than 2,000 hospital admissions a year. Smoking has been stopped on all trust sites, including the grounds, outside building entrances and in vehicles. Trust staff went smoke-free in January. David Loughton, CBE, Chief Executive for RWT, said, "We are all living in a challenging and stressful time due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and we appreciate that this may leave some people wanting to smoke while at work or while accessing our services. But smoking remains to be one of the biggest causes of death in this country, and that cannot be ignored. Through the NHS long-term plan, every smoker admitted to our hospitals will now be offered support to quit, while outpatients and staff will be signposted to a number of free resources. We are extremely proud to be making this change, which actively encourages healthy behaviours and reduces the risk of harm to others."
Lord Austin has hit out at shop staff and customers for failing to wear face masks and follow social distancing rules. The former Dudley North MP said he has seen people breaching COVID-19 regulations in branches of Sainsbury's and Tesco's in London. He urged supermarket bosses to make sure official guidance is followed or the risk the country going into another full-scale lockdown. Lord Austin said, "I'm fed up of seeing shop staff and customers not wearing masks or staying 2 metres away. Don't blame the government if we go into another lockdown. Wear a mask is not too much to ask." Spokesman for Sainsbury's said, "We will follow government guidelines and continue with a range of measures we'll have in place to keep everyone safe in our stores."
Pubs are the backbone of Britain and they need a fighting chance to make a profit. If the rules don't change, they won't survive. Pub landlord James Stevens is petitioning the government to change the rules so pubs can provide bar service again. Currently, under the new COVID regulations, pubs and restaurants must shut at 10 p.m. and they can only provide table service. But James, who runs the Chapel House in Gornal, said for small pubs like his, it's been a real worry. "We can hold 32 people with the new restrictions. It was about 70 to 80 before with the beer garden, but we can't open that now as it can't be policed," he said. "With these new rules, you can't put a one-size-fits-all policy on all the pubs. Some pubs can take 120-odd people, but these smaller pubs, proper community pubs, they won't survive. The wage bill can't be met." The 43-year-old said the rules means he has to have a member of staff on table service rather than just one behind the bar all night, meaning more wages to pay. He added, "I'm just not making enough. I worked 10 hours a day, 7 days a week last week, and after I paid all our hard-working staff, I had £90 for myself. We wouldn't normally have anyone on the floor. It's just not practical for a small drinking pub. I was thinking bar service could be provided in these smaller places as long as people wear a mask. Otherwise, these pubs will go to the wall and won't come back. It's a real worry and one we need to highlight sooner rather than later." James has run the Chapel House for the past 4 years. His partner works as a nurse at Russell's Hall Hospital. "I've no argument about reducing the seating indoors. My partner is a nurse at the NHS. I know how dangerous this is. But we can't run the pub at a loss. One small change and people can go to the bar and back to their seat. It would make a world of difference." James has written to his local MP, Marco Longhi, for Dudley North, about the issue. Mr. Longhi has said he plans to meet with James to discuss his concerns and stated he was committed to helping support local community pubs heavily impacted by the local lockdown measures.
More local news coming up shortly, but now it's come round again, hasn't it? It's quiz time and it's over to you, Mina.
It's that time of week again where we test you on This Week in History with our flashback quiz. As always, all our questions are on events that happened on this week in history. And we will bring you the answers in our flashback section coming up later. So, question one. How long did it take Sputnik 1 to orbit the Earth in 1957? Question two. In what year was Bob Geldof born? Question three. What was the name of the first talking film that L. Jolson starred in 1927? Question four. What is the nationality of Desmond Tutu, born in 1931? Question 5. The film Schindler's List is a true story of World War II. But what was the full name of the hero of the story after whom the film is titled? And finally, question 6. What was the name of the woman known as the Mother of the Salvation Army? Listen out for the answers with Flashback Roger a little later. And if you miss them, don't panic. I'll run through them at the end of this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Good luck!
Yes, don't panic. We'll run through the answers a little bit later on. But remember, before that, Flashback Roger will be along, where all the answers will be revealed first on events that happened on This Week in History. But before that, let's return to the local news with Christine, Angela and Ian.
Bosses at Wolverhampton's New Cross Hospital say parking charges will be regularly reviewed after being reinstated following a grace period amid the pandemic. Gwen Nuttall, Chief Operating Officer at the Trust which runs New Cross Hospital, was questioned about the return of parking charges for patients at the hospital. She acknowledged that patients and visitors were now being forced to pay for parking, but stressed charges were continuously reviewed. It comes after the Express and Star revealed disabled patients and parents of sick children were facing different rules on parking charges depending on which hospital they visit. Russell's Hall Hospital in Dudley introduced free parking for certain patient groups following an announcement from the government last year, but others in the Black Country and Staffordshire have not. Russell's Hall has scrapped parking charges for Blue Badge patients and the parents of sick children staying overnight, while frequent attendees are given concessions. However, other NHS trusts in the region say they are awaiting further guidance from the Department of Health and Social Care before bringing in any free parking. Parking remains free for NHS staff across the board. The Department of Health and Social Care has said trusts were expected to begin introducing free parking for certain groups from April this year. Free parking for these groups will become mandatory from January, it said.
Bill Effridge has announced he has rejoined UKIP 2 years after quitting the party over its lurch towards extremism. The former Dudley councillor and MEP will serve as economic spokesman under interim leader Neil Hamilton, who took over earlier this month after suspension of the previous leader, Freddie Vacher. Mr. Effridge, who said he considering standing as a candidate in next year's local elections, said UKIP was a very different beast from the one he left. It has changed completely and is now the type of party that it was during the period of great success, he said. He may only have a fraction of the support he once had, but all that could change, and the time is right for a real right of centre party to come back that will look after businesses and jobs. Mr. Effridge initially joined UKIP in 2011 and made 3 failed leadership bids in the wake of Nigel Farage's decision to stand down following the 2016 EU referendum. He was a West Midlands Europe MP for 5 years.
New seating areas outside pubs and cafes and wider pavements have been introduced in Wolverhampton as the council works to boost business and make the city centre safe and welcoming. The measures aim to assist local restaurants and bars while also making it easier for people to follow social distancing guidelines. New requirements when eating and drinking out were announced by the government, and people are being encouraged to follow these latest guidelines as they continue to support local businesses. Under the city centre scheme, Victoria Street has been pedestrianised from its junction at Queen's Square to the junction with Bell Street, and new outdoor seating areas have been created on the widened pavements. To encourage greater customer confidence and help replace seating areas inside that have been lost due to social distancing regulations, businesses were encouraged to apply for the pavement licences brought in by the government in July. The licences allow pubs, restaurants and bars to safely extend their space outdoors. Government set the fee for the licence at £100, but the council has reduced the cost to £25 to help ease the burden for businesses. 4 businesses in Victoria Street applied for the licences and are now starting to offer the new outdoor seating to customers. They are the George Wallace, the Subcontinent, the Gifford Arms and Lindy Lou's Cafe and Coffee Shop. Further work under the scheme has included installing field planters to improve the appearance of the area, feature lighting, work to improve vacant shopfront appearances and new bike parking. Parts of Darlington Street, Queen Square and Lichfield Street have also become one way to allow the creation of a new cycle lane and pavement widening. The measures have been funded by the Council's successful bid for £347,000 from the Government's Emergency Active Travel Fund, EATF, and were first introduced on a temporary basis in June. Feedback from monitoring the temporary schemes and talking to local businesses and other stakeholders was positive, with people feeling that they had been effective. Based on this feedback, the council used the remaining EATF funding to carry out the work. Other EATF projects already carried out in the city include cycle lanes in the city centre, changes to the speed limit on the Ring Road, and a new toucan crossing over Ring Road St Peter's. The government announced that from Thursday, September the 24th, all pubs, bars, restaurants and other hospitality venues in England must close by 10 p.m. They will be restricted to providing table service only, except for takeaways. Table bookings of more than six are not allowed and groups cannot mingle. Staff must now wear masks, as must customers when not seated at their table to eat or drink. Businesses are also legally required to take customers' contact details so they can be traced if needed.
A landmark Wolverhampton city centre church, which has been left empty since worshippers moved out a year ago, has been named as one of the country's most at-risk buildings. The Victorian Society say the church, which sits at the corner of Darlington Street and School Street in the city, faces a bleak future as efforts to find a purchaser have failed. The Society has named it as one of the 10 most at-risk buildings in the country, which also includes the Brighton Hippodrome, the former Bavaria Place police station in Bradford, and the Samaritan Hospital for Women in London. The first church on the Darlington Methodist Church site opened in 1825, and it became bigger in 1851. The current building was opened in 1901. It closed in September 2019, and national property consultancy Bruton Knowles was appointed to help find a joint venture partner to take on part of the landmark building. But efforts so far have proved unsuccessful. Comedian and television presenter Griff Rees-Jones, who is president of the Victorian Society, said, "To have such a wonderful building in such a state in the centre of Wolverhampton sends out a terrible message. Too often this leads to accusations of buildings becoming an eyesore. Surely a community can be found for this stunning building that has long served the people of Wolverhampton. The council should take enforcement action to prevent further deterioration." A spokesman for Wolverhampton Council said, "We share the concerns raised about this important building in our city, and we are working with the owners and interested parties to find a future use for this building." Darlington Street Methodist Church held its final service on Sunday, September the 29th, 2019. It was announced that month that the church would close after approval was given by the Methodist District Synod. The decision came after more than a year of uncertainty, after church leaders originally met in 2018 to discuss how to overcome increasing challenges. The interior of the church has vaulted ceilings with richly ornamented plasterwork, as well as original gallery seating. It also features an organ by Nicholson & Co. of Worcester.
Up to 250 apartments can be created at Wolverhampton Landmark Beatties Building. Plans are being drawn up to transform the historic site following its sale earlier this year. It is thought the upper part of the building will be converted into apartments and the lower part will be kept for retail purposes, if plans are backed by the City Council. High Street giant House of Fraser is due to leave its Beatties home for the Mander Centre, though the move is not expected to happen before the end of the year. Plans for Beatties have yet to be officially submitted, but sources say proposals for its future are being worked on by a London-based firm which bought the building for a knockdown price of £3 million. No timescale has been put on when work might begin. With the Victorian building being such a large site, it was always expected there will be a residential element to any redevelopment. Wolverhampton Council says it will have been in contact with the new owner, but has not commented any further on potential plans. If the plans do progress, it will mark a new era for the Victoria Street building after more than 140 years as a retail giant in the city. The proposals are likely to please housing chiefs keen to see more city centre-based living opportunities created. The famous Beatties name has been synonymous with Wolverhampton since the shop was launched by James Beattie in 1877. It was taken over by House of Fraser in 2005, but the Beatties name remained on the building, and many shoppers continue to refer to it under its historic name.
Our final news roundup on the way, plus the news from our local football clubs too. But now let's head over to the Sightless News with Pete.
World Sight Day is an international day of awareness held annually on the second Thursday of October to focus attention on the global issue of eye health. This year, World Sight Day falls on October the 8th, 2020. And this year's World Sight Day call to action is Hope in Sight. More than 1 billion people cannot see well because they don't have access to glasses. World Sight Day is about finding solutions to ensure that everyone, everywhere, has access to sight. Globally in 2020, at least 2.2 billion people have vision impairment that may or not be addressed. Of those, at least 1 billion people have a vision impairment that could have been prevented or has yet to be addressed. In addition, 2.6 billion people have myopia, which is short-sightedness, including 312 million children under the age of 19. Additionally, millions of people are living with eye conditions that increase their risk of sight loss. Globally, 196 million people are estimated to be living with age-related macular degeneration, 146 million people living with diabetic retinopathy, 76 million people living with glaucoma, and 277 million people living with high myopia. The top causes of visual impairment and blindness are diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, glaucoma,
refractive errors,
with the top cause of sight loss in the world at 39% is cataracts. So World Sight Day is a good day to raise awareness of sight loss and avoidable sight loss, be it a cataract, glaucoma, refractive error or diabetic retinopathy. To avoid it, it could all begin with an eye examination. So eye examinations are really important. Remember, throughout the world, there are at least 1 billion people who have a vision impairment that could have been prevented. World Sight Day is the 8th of October, 2020, with this year's call to action, Hope in Sight.
Thanks, Pete. Our final news roundup now with Ian, Angela and Christine.
A number of police officers have moved from Sedgley Police Station to their new base at Dudley Fire Station. The move is expected to save West Midlands Police money and make more efficient use of the fire services estate. It comes as part of the West Midlands Police Estates programme announced in 2018, which will save the force £5 million per year through disposing of underused buildings with millions of pounds worth of maintenance costs outstanding and making other parts of the estate more efficient. The West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, David Jameson, said, "Co-locating with our colleagues at West Midlands Fire Service has allowed neighbourhood teams to remain where the public want them to be, at the heart of the communities which they serve. Not only will this move allow us to save money, but it will also mean that officers are able to work much closer with the fire service. We have already seen the success of co-location in Walsall, where we have police officers and PCSOs working alongside the council. This approach is allowing us to save money by protecting funding for neighbourhood policing, thus allowing recruitment of officers and PCSOs." Assistant Director for Corporate Asset Management for West Midlands Police, Andy Kelly, said, "Bringing our services direct to the public by working from joint community bases is a key part of our new strategy aimed at improving the services we provide to the public. We would like to have more officers co-located with shared premises based in the heart of local communities." The neighbourhood team from Sedgley moved into the new location on September the 30th. The new location does not serve as public contact offices and is not open to the public.
The road cycling time trial at the 2022 Commonwealth Games will start and finish in Wolverhampton, it has been announced. West Park will be the start and finish point for one of cycling's toughest events, a straight race against the clock for individual cyclists, and a real test of strength and endurance. The event will see more than 90 cyclists competing in the men's and women's competitions and will be free for people to line the streets to watch the action. Cannock Chase has already been announced as the base for mountain biking events during the Games.
A new war memorial will be installed on the grounds of Village Church by November. The £5,000 memorial is earmarked for the land outside the entrance of St All Saints Church in Sedgley. It is hoped the 1.5-ton memorial will be installed before Remembrance Day, which falls on November the 11th. A remembrance service won't be held at the church this year due to the coronavirus pandemic, but wreaths will still be laid. The memorial, which will be made from marble, will stand at 5 feet 4 inches tall. It will bear the Sedgley coat of arms along with the words, "We will remember them." The memorial will be located on a patch of grass near the church's front entrance. There are further plans to install an information board at a later date detailing soldiers who have fought in wars. Sedgley Councillor Michael Evans said, "It is the intention to erect an information board highlighting all the wars where our brave servicemen gave their lives in defence of our great country."
Film crews have been spotted at Dudley's Himley Hall over the last few days, with vans and caravans parked up outside. A sign outside also stated, "Public notice, COVID-19 controlled film set, please avoid," while a platform with lights has been set up outside a building. It has not been confirmed what is being filmed at Himley Hall, but it is rumoured to be Benediction, a film based on the story of English poet, writer and soldier Siegfried Sassoon. According to the website IMDb, it will star Doctor Who actor Peter Capaldi and Jack Lowden, who starred in Dunkirk. Sassoon became one of the leading poets of the First World War, and his poetry described the horrors of the trenches. He later won acclaim for his prose work, notably his three-volume fictionalised autobiography, collectively known as the Sherston Trilogy.
A care home has benefited through donations from the labours of a local gardener. Mick Poultney of Colleygate had completed the work to get his allotment ready for the Malvern show when it was cancelled due to the coronavirus restrictions, entering them instead in a virtual vegetable show for Colleygate Gardening Club in Hales Owen. After the competition was finished, the 69-year-old found he had more than 30 kilos of leftover vegetables, including a 46-centimetre-long leek, and said he wanted to continue to help his local care home, Two Gates House, also in Hales Owen. He said, "I had all these vegetables left over, so I got back in contact with Two Gates, as it's local to me, and I know quite a few people there. They've been really receptive to it, as they think the veg is high quality, and everyone has been really happy to take delivery of the vegetables, except perhaps the kitchen staff, as I've just given them extra work." Among the vegetables donated are red cabbage, carrots, beetroots, parsnips, onions, sweet and chilli peppers, and rhubarb, all of which was grown in Mr. Poultney's allotment at Abbey Road Allotments. Mr. Poultney, who has been a keen gardener for more than 35 years, said his crop of vegetables had come out as well as it had because of excellent growing conditions. He said, "You've got to have a good brew under them, which is where I do well, as I make my own compost. And locally, I'm known as the compost king. Once you get the conditions right and grow the vegetables in the right area, be it under a greenhouse, under cover, or in the open, you will get a good crop." Mr. Poultney said it was nice to be able to provide Two Gates House with the vegetables, as he knew they would go to good use, and said the rest would go to the Albion Street Church soup kitchen in Dudley. He said, "I'm happy to give the veg to people who will enjoy it."
Sports news to follow shortly, but now let's listen out for the answers to the quiz as we look at This Week in History with Flashback Roger.
Hi everybody, this is Roger again with our Flashback section, where we'll look at some of the events from the week to the 4th to the 10th of October of past years, and of course where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On October the 4th, 1957, saw the beginning of the space age when Soviets launched the first man-made satellite, Sputnik 1. It was about the size of a beach ball, 58 centimetres or 22.8 inches in English, and it weighed 83.6 kilos. Which is 183.9 pounds. And it took 98 minutes to orbit the Earth on its elliptical path. On October the 5th, 1951, Bob Geldof was born and was named Robert Frederick Zenon Geldof. This Irish singer with Boomtown Rats, he organised the recording of the record Do They Know It's Christmas in 1984 and the Live Aid concert in 1985 to raise funds for the famine relief. He also starred in the film Pink Floyd The Wall in 1982 and co-wrote Boomtown Rat's song called I Don't Like Mondays. The jazz singer, starring Al Jolson, premiered on October the 6th in 1927. It was the first feature-length motion picture with synchronised score and synchronised singing and speech in some scenes, and it heralded the end of the silent film era. South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who was the winner of the 1984 Nobel Prize, was born on October the 7th, 1931. Tutu is known for his work as an anti-apartheid and human rights activist and was Bishop of Johannesburg between 1985 to 1986 and Archbishop of Cape Town 1986 to 96, being the first black African to hold both these positions. Born in 1908, German industrialist Oskar Schindler of Schindler's List fame died on October the 9th, 1974. In 1940, he and his wife saved 1,200 Jews from concentration camps by convincing the Nazis to allow them to work in a factory that they ran in Poland. They spent most of their wealth bribing German officials to keep the Jewish workers safe. Prior to World War II, Schindler had joined the Nazi Party and worked as a spy for them. After seeing the treatment of the Jews, he began his quest to save as many as possible. His efforts were the basis of the movie Schindler's List, which came out in 1993. Catherine Booth, born in 1829 and died on October the 4th, 1890, Catherine was an English preacher who had been dubbed the Mother of the Salvation Army. She and her husband, William Booth, founded the Salvation Army in London in 1865. Catherine met her future husband, William, in 1851, where he was reading at a temperance poem called The Grog Seller's Dream. Abstinence from alcohol was a passion of Catherine, who, like William, had been thrown out of the Wesleyan movement because of their reformist views. They fell in love and were married in 1855. Well, that's the end of the fascinating facts for this week, folks. So I hope you've been listening and you do well with the quiz. But for now, this is Rog saying ta-ra for now. Bye-bye.
More fascinating facts with Flashback Roger next week. And if you missed them, we'll run through the quiz answers at the end of this week's edition with Mina, who's here now with the weather. How's it looking, Mina?
Less rain around than last week, with temperatures around the same between 12 and 14 degrees. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:26 a.m. will be sunrise and 18:23 p.m. will have the sunset. Friday 9th of October, we start with light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees with low UV levels. On Saturday 10th of October, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees with low UV levels. Sunday 11th of October, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees with low UV levels again. Moving on to Monday 12th of October, we have light cloud and gentle breeze with a maximum temperature around 12 degrees with low UV levels. Tuesday 13th of October, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees with low UV levels. Wednesday 14th of October, again we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees and low UV levels. And finally, Thursday, 15th of October, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees with low UV levels. You might need your coats, but not so much your umbrella next week. But whatever the weather, enjoy the weather.
As there's a bit less rain around, I think I will. Thanks, Mina. Use my local football clubs now. And did you know the FA Cup's started already? Here's Ian.
Wolves have completed the signing of French left-back Rayan Aïnouri from Ligue 1 club Angers. The 19-year-old arrives at Molineux on a season-long loan with an option to make the switch permanent. Ruben Vinagre is expected to depart for Olympiacos before transfer deadline, with Aïnouri his replacement. Wolves captain Connor Cody has retained his place in the England squad for the upcoming October fixtures. The defender, who signed a new 5-year deal with the club, has been called up for the second successive time under manager Gareth Southgate. Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo will be without 98% of his squad as they are called up to international duty. Alongside Conor Cody, Portugal have called up 5 Wolves players, while Adama Traore has been selected for Spain. Wolves striker Raul Jimenez has committed his long-term future to Wolves after signing a new 4-year contract until 2024. Oscar Burr is looking forward to gaining some crucial first-team experience after being given the green light to leave Wolves on loan. The arrivals of fellow right-backs Nelson Semedo and Kiana Hoofer means the 22-year-old Dane's game time at Molineux is likely to be limited this season. Burr has interest in the Championship from Middlesbrough and Brentford. Wolves ended their losing streak and got back in the winning column with a tight 1-0 victory over Premier League strugglers Fulham at Molineux on Sunday. Pedro Neto arrived with his first goal of the season when he fired home from the edge of the box after a spell of Wolves' pressure in the second half. Nuno Espirito Santo made 3 changes to the side that lost 4-0 to West Ham last week, starting in a 3-4-3 formation. Max Kilman came in at left-sided centre-back for his first game of the season. Leander Dindonka replaced João Moutinho in midfield, while Daniel Podence returned from injury, meaning Adama Traore took his place on the bench. With an international break, Wolves are next in action on Saturday the 17th of October away to Leeds United with a 4 p.m. kick-off. West Brom have confirmed the signing of Filip Kravinovic in another season-long loan from Benfica. The Croatian midfielder was integral to Slaven Bilic's side in the club's promotion campaign last season and was one of the head coach's top priorities in the transfer market. Metz forward Habib Diallo is a player high on Albion's shortlist as they work to bring in a new striker. Slaven Bilic has made it clear he wants to add another goalscorer to his ranks before the transfer window closes. Huddersfield's Carlon Grant is believed to be number one target, with drawn-out negotiations still ongoing. But it is understood Senegal international Diallo is a genuine alternative. Albion's search for their first win since returning to the Premier League goes on after they were beaten 2-0 at Southampton. In what was a comfortable victory for the hosts, Ralf Hasenhüttl's side dominated the first half and were twice denied by brilliant stops from Sam Johnston before Moussa Dienepo finally opened the scoring in the 41st minute. The Baggies did improve after the restart but created very little apart from a few dangerous deliveries from Mateus Pereira free kicks. And Southampton wrapped up what was a deserved victory with 20 minutes remaining when Auriel Romeur fired in a spectacular volley. Albion's next game is on Saturday the 17th of October at home to Burnley with a 4 p.m. kickoff. In the qualifying second round of the FA Cup at the weekend, there were some local teams in action. Here are the results. Hensford Town 0, Hales Owen Town 0. Hales Owen won 5-3 on penalties. Chase Town 1, AFC Telford United 1. Telford won 5-4 on penalties. Buxton 0, Stafford Rangers 0. Stafford Rangers won 4-2 on penalties. Alvechurch 2, Kidderminster Harriers 2. Alvechurch winning 4-2 on penalties.
Thanks, Ian. Now, since he recorded that piece, the date of the Wolves game away to Leeds has changed from Saturday 17th of October to Monday the 19th of October with an 8 p.m. kickoff, and the Albion game at home to Burnley is still on Saturday the 17th of October, but with a 3 p.m. kickoff. Some Black Country history now as we have a look at our Black Country canals. Here's Steve.
Since we entered into lockdown, I've been taking up my allotted daily exercise, enjoying regular walks down the canal where I live in Albury. These usually quiet canals are awash with a steady stream of walkers and cyclists amongst the backdrop of a series of derelict factories, which now lie in disrepair. The canals serve as a vivid reminder of the industrial hub which the Black Country once was, and to a lesser extent still is. Today I'm going to talk about how and why these canals were constructed, and the role they played in the Black Country becoming the workshop of the world, producing all manner of goods, ranging from traps, locks and pots and pans, to leatherware, anchors, chain and glassware. Prior to the development of a network of canals in the mid-18th century, goods were largely transported via horse and wagon along roads. Roads were often found to be in a poor state. In the summer, they were plagued by a series of hillocks, and in the winter, they descended into mud baths. Even where roads were maintained by toll keepers, they were often found to be in a less than adequate state, leading to uncertain and long journey times. As the Black Country's industry continued to expand during the late 18th century, there was an increasing desire and need for an easier, cheaper and more reliable way to transport raw materials and finished goods. Therefore, canal construction began to be widely promoted by groups of businessmen with common interests. Canal construction was a very expensive business and usually beyond the means of even wealthy groups of industrialists. Therefore, canal companies were formed and funds raised by selling shares in the business. Although the majority of the shares were held by men of wealth and influence, it was common for smaller local businesses and traders to give their backing to canal schemes by purchasing one or two shares. The building of the first Black Country canals began during the mid-1700s, directed by the father of the English canal system, James Brinley. The Staffordshire and Worcestershire Canal underwent construction in 1766 and was completed in 1772. To begin with, the canals were constructed by local labourers who began to be referred to as navvies. As time went on, gangs of navvies grew up. Many of these men came from economically depressed areas, such as Scotland and Ireland. They travelled from one scheme to another as work became available, and acquired a not undeserved reputation for hard drinking and often unruly behaviour. However, it should also be noted that experienced navvies had real skills to offer and played a vital role in the construction of canals. Eventually, there was a vast network of canals throughout the country and around 160 miles of canals here in the Black Country alone. These canals were the equivalent of the motorways today, allowing the cheap and easy transportation of raw materials. The development of canals led to a dramatic decrease in the cost of coal and other raw materials, which subsequently fueled the growth of new industries alongside canals, enabling the Black Country to fulfil its potential and develop into the workshop of the world, which it would become known. The use of canals to transport goods eventually declined once railways were developed from 1830 onwards. But they, of course, remain an important part of Black Country heritage and continue to be used today, albeit for different reasons.
Thanks, Steve. Now, this week's flashback quiz, if you missed the answers, they're coming up now. Have you got them, Mina?
I have. So, how many did you get right this week? Let's find out. Question 1. How long did it take Sputnik 1 to orbit the Earth in 1957? The answer is 98 minutes. Question 2. In what year was Bob Geldof born? The answer here is 1951. Question 3. What was the name of the first talking film that Al Jolson starred in 1927? And the answer here is The Jazz Singer. Question 4. What is the nationality of Desmond Tutu, born in 1931? And of course, it's South African. Question 5. What was the full name of the hero of the film Schindler's List? And the answer here is Oscar Schindler. And finally, question 6. What was the name of the woman known as the Mother of the Salvation Army? And the answer here is Catherine Booth. We shall have another flashback quiz next week. But to finish this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, here's Pete.
Thank you, Mina. And to end this week's edition, a little music quiz. So, as always, I'd like to say thank you to Andy Coulson for sending in the questions. Thank you, Andy. We appreciate them. And let's see how you get on. So what we do, we'll give you a song title and I'll miss a word out. And the word I miss out, I'll put the word what in. OK, so see if you can guess the song title. So let's start off in 1955. Hernando's what? The Johnson Brothers. Hernando's what? The Johnson Brothers. No, no, no. I don't know it either. 1956. You might know this one. Blue Suede what? You're right. Carl Perkins. Okay. So 1956. Blue Suede what? Carl Perkins. And finally, from 1957, Young What by Tab Hunter. So Young What by Tab Hunter. That's from 1957. And as always, we will give you the answers at the start of next week's edition. Well, I think that's it. Simon?
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us. Stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!